This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
When it's time to go after the biggest buck of your life, you need gear that will not only make your life easier, but that you can also depend on for years to come. Lone Wolf Custom Gear has been the leader in mobile hunting equipment for over 40 years and started out right here in Wisconsin. From inventing the climbing stick to perfecting ultralight tree stands, Lone Wolf Custom Gear continues to innovate and put the best mobile hunting equipment on the market with a ton of fantastic accessories that allow you to customize your gear exactly how you want it. Whether it be the high-end DeQuisto series sticks and stands or the affordable Patriot series, you'll have the peace of mind knowing that you're hanging off of gear that was 100% made in the USA, right here in the Midwest, in fact, and has been designed and perfected by some of the best whitetail hunters in the world. Not to mention, it has an unconditional lifetime warranty that's so good your grandkids and even great-grandkids will be able to use it when they're hunting. Go build your kit out today at lonewolfcustomgear.com.
E-scouting is the crucial first step to any great adventure, but sometimes we gotta swap the muck boots for flip-flops and the shotguns for fishing rods and get out on the water to recharge those batteries. Whether you're in search of the lunker that broke you off last summer or trying to get the family out for a day on the water, you need to have a game plan. That's where Onyx Fish comes into play. With detailed bathymetry maps, expert information, historical fisheries data, and filters that allow you to hone in on your next favorite lake for a multitude of species, this is an angler's best friend. Shoot, I'm actually planning a father-son trip to the Northwoods with some buddies right now, and I already feel like I've got a game plan in place to catch more fish than the rest of those guys. And the best part is, it's easy, intuitive, and based on the same platform as our beloved Onyx Hunt app. Go check it out today and start finding your next honey hole at onyxmaps.com/fish.
Turkey season is here, and when it comes time to hit the woods and chase some gobbles, you need gear that's as ready to hunt as you are. That's why I'm proud to be partnered with Huntworth Gear. This spring, I'll be running around the woods in the Durham lightweight pants, which have been my go-to pants for everything the last couple of years. They've got a waterproof seat and knee panels that keep you dry when setting up, and breathable, quick-drying fabric to keep you comfortable after a long walk through tall, dewy grass, or when you're putting on the miles looking for that lonely long beard. On top, I'll be wearing the Grayling Heat Boost hoodie if it's cold and the Camden lightweight hoodie when it's hot. And don't forget the Ames lightweight gloves with fingerless index and thumb holes that give you the dexterity you need to run those calls unimpeded all season long. Go build your kit out today at huntworthgear.com or visit the hunting section of your local farm and fleet or fleet farm to find it in person. Southwest Wisconsin is home to one of the most unique trout fisheries in the country, with thousands of miles of spring-fed streams twisting their way through valleys, pastures, and prairies. And one of the best ways to experience this fishery is with a fly rod in hand. Good Chance Fly Fishing is your guide to all that the Driftless has to offer, whether you're an experienced angler or just looking to get out and try something new. To find more info and book your trip, visit goodchanceflyfishing.com.
If you've listened to this show before, I'm sure you've noticed that if there's one thing that keeps coming up over and over again, it's the importance of public lands and waters. Shoot, I'd even venture to guess that 90% of what we talk about on this show takes place on public lands. We all love the challenges we face and the memories we create in these wild places, and we need folks who are in our corner to protect them. That's why we're proud to have partnered with the good folks over at the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. The Wisconsin BHA chapter was formed to provide a voice to hunters and anglers throughout Wisconsin that want to protect our public land legacy, and everyone involved works their tails off to protect public lands and access those public lands and waters.
stay informed on all things public lands, the issues facing our public lands, policies that might affect them, and to cross paths with some of the coolest outdoorsmen out there, I highly encourage you to join the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, or at least the chapter of whatever state you live in. To join BHA, visit backcountryhunters.org/join, and to learn more about what we have going on here in the Badger State, visit backcountryhunters.org/Wisconsin. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, which is brought to you by Lone Wolf Custom Gear. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, hope you're all doing well. I hope you've been getting outside, getting some cameras hung, or harassing some fish, doing something fun outside. I got out this week on the Lower Wisconsin River with previous guest of the show, Andrew Wolf, who mercilessly kicked my butt. I had to stop on the way home just to find a fish to save myself from the skunk, as much as I hate to admit that. But it was fun to get out. River is still a little bit high, but found some good fish and had a pretty solid morning. Before we dive into this week's episode, you guys, one more quick shout out, as always, for the deer season kickoff that we have coming up. That'll be Wednesday, August 12th, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Great Dane in Fitchburg. E-scouting workshop, very similar to last year. We're going to do some e-scouting breakdowns, a bunch of free food, a bunch of free beer, Q&A. Got some awesome giveaways this year. I'm super excited. So mark your calendars for Wednesday, August 12th, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. for that. And while you're at it, if you want to give yourself a really jam-packed, kick-ass, just awesome week, the weekend prior, leading up to that, August 8th and 9th, our very own Tony Cordero from Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, our R3 coordinator, has organized a Learn to Hunt Bears with Dogs that's going to be up in, I believe, Vilas and Oneida counties. I think, don't quote me on those. That's going to be August 8th and 9th. You can find information on that on our BHA events page. So go check that out. That's going to be an awesome event. I myself am certainly going to try to make it up there for that, because I've said it on the show before, but if you've never hunted behind dogs and gotten to see scent hounds do their thing and just the way that they work through timber in pursuit of game, it is truly a sight to behold. Not to mention, we're not dealing with like raccoons or any small critter. Like, we are dealing with full-on black bears in this event. So it's gonna be awesome. I'm super excited for that. Go RSVP for that so that we can get you on the list, and should be an awesome time. But this week, you guys, I have the one and only. You guys know him, you love him, maybe you don't love him, you should, I don't know, maybe, but our very own Alec Beckers from Wisconsin BHA. Alec, how are we doing today, buddy?
Doing well. There's at least one person that loves me, or at least pretends to, and it's my wife. So I'm pretty happy at the end of the day, you know?
That's all we need. That is all we need, buddy. Good old contractual obligation. That's perfect.
Exactly.
I love it, man. Dude, how's summer been for you so far?
It's good. I would kind of describe it as like the Happy Gilmore, you know, only 365 days until hockey tryouts. It's hunting season preparation time, you know. Yep. First thing on my calendar is I'm going out to Colorado for some archery elk. So I've got, as we're recording today, I'll be there in 60 days.
So that's crazy.
Yeah, really got to get my ass in shape for that. I would say archery shape is the skill that I need to continue honing for the rest of the summer. I've been working on everything else pretty well.
Sure. That's awesome. What state are you going to for that?
Colorado.
Very nice. Yep. Excellent. Yep. I was talking with Andrew while we were on the boat. Do you feel like Colorado is, I mean, obviously they've made it more difficult. It used to be an over-the-counter state, so it's starting to get tougher for non-residents to gain access out there. Do you feel like Colorado, if you were going out west, is still the state to go to if you're trying to do
you know, not an over-the-counter hunt anymore, but if you're trying to do a Western hunt, do you think, whether from a beginner standpoint, it's a great first state to try and tackle? Do you think it's the quality and the game and everything out there is still what everybody thinks of when they think of Colorado? I don't want to rag on it, but we were just discussing whether or not it's becoming, not, I hesitate to say overhyped, but
I still think it's a very solid state with a lot of opportunities. If I think about elk hunting, I mean, there are still non-resident over-the-counter tags for elk hunting. It's just only rifle seasons now.
Okay,
so second and third rifle seasons, depending on the unit, certain units will still have over-the-counter opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Archery for non-residents is all 100% draw. Now you have to draw and like get in the points game, but there are units that you can draw with 0 points. I'm wasting a bunch of points, but the unit we're going to has always been a draw, but you can draw it with 1 point. So there's a lot of opportunities. It's not that challenging to like get into the, call it, draw system. And I think Colorado also has a lot of different like habitat types and terrain types that you can pick your own adventure in Colorado. You can be in the classic alpine, like, you know, skiing mountain kind of scenery. Mm-hmm. I know where we're going to be going is a very high concentration of 14ers. So there's a lot of country above 12,000-13,000 feet, but you can also get into like deserts and chase elk in, or mule deer in like sagebrush and juniper and you know, more rolling hills, drier kind of country. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of variation in Colorado. And if again, just from the elk side of things, I want to say it's like half of the population of Rocky Mountain elk is in the state of Colorado.
Sure.
For the entire country. So yeah, there's still a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. That's good to know. I think part of it's so much clickbait and everything with these articles. And I remember seeing the outrage of like, oh, Colorado's, you can't do over the counter anymore. And like, that was where they left it. So I didn't realize that you could still essentially, you know, yeah, you had to draw, or you could, you know, had to apply for it, but you can still draw with zero, or you could still get over the counter rifle points. That's very good to know. I feel like it's just gotten kind of like bad PR rap a little bit, just with like people talking about pressure and all that sort of stuff. But at the same time, I mean, it's Western hunting. Like, you're going to find, you're going to bump into people. It's public land, right? You're going to like bump into people. And I mean, from what I've heard from you on your past couple of hunts, it seemed to me like you guys do a pretty good job of getting away from folks for the most part, don't you?
Yeah. I think there's the people out West also have a different, like scale for what they consider to be, there's too many dudes in the woods.
Sure.
Like, we were talking to people in Colorado a couple of years ago that were like, oh man, I see a different dude every mile down this road. And we're like, what? Come on out to Saturday before Thanksgiving in Wisconsin and I'll show you what crowded public land looks like.
Right.
But you can also see a lot further out there, et cetera, et cetera. But there's, very simply put, I think kind of two crowds of people out West. There's the crowd that drives around and road hunts. And I don't mean like they're shooting from their car.
Right.
I mean, they're just looking for opportunities close to the road. And then there's the guys that are going miles into a wilderness area, either hiking or like on horseback, that kind of thing. But what we found, if you get like 300-500 yards away from a road, the amount of people you see drops off dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
So that area between, you know, 300 yards from the road and 5 miles from the road, that's where we like to go.
I like that. Yeah, That's funny you say that. It's like 300 to 500 yards, because it's kind of the same thing on public ear in a state like Wisconsin. You know what I mean? Like, sure. It's funny that metric translates across, you know, Western hunting versus Midwestern hunting, because that's, yeah. And it's really, I mean, granted, out west, you're dealing with a lot more elevation change in that 300 to 500 yards, but still, like, it's in most cases a 15 to 30 minute walk, depending on what the terrain looks like. And as long as you're willing to just do that, it's, you should be in the chips there. Do you find many elk or mule deer, like, within 300 to 500 yards of the road? Like, is it fairly common?
Elk, I think, are a lot, generally going to be further away.
Sure. Right.
They respond much more to human pressure, mm-hmm. Than mule deer will, because they're a lot bigger, right? And mule deer are smaller and can hide a little easier. The hill that I'll die on is mule deer are the dumbest creatures I've ever come across. And I've never seen mule deer, like, all of the mule deer we ever see are pretty damn close to a road. Mm-hmm. I mean, 200-300 yards. It's like that, just far enough away that, oh, I can hear a guy driving up on his side by side. Let me scoot out of here a little bit. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, I can see that dude 300 yards away. I'm going to run away. Just that, like, that threshold is where we seem to run into all the mule deer. Yeah, I'm sure you can find them 10 miles back. Great. I'm pretty happy with the little spikers that my wife and I shot 100 yards from the road last year. I got a mule deer in my freezer. You don't.
That's very true. I was talking with a buddy of mine. He basically just said that, like, mule deer are, like, when you get up to them and you look at their bodies and everything, they are, like, legitimately just, like, bigger deer than whitetails. Have you found that to be true?
No, because we only shoot small deer in this house. Small bucks only. I would say yes. Like, they have bigger body
proportions, kind of.
Proportions, but a mature whitetail buck, I think, from Wisconsin, like a mature whitetail buck from Wisconsin, I think is going to be bigger body size than a similar age mule deer. I don't know, because I've never seen a four and a half year old mule deer on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I would be shocked if somebody told me that their 4.5-year-old mule deer weighed 167 pounds like my 4.5-year-old whitetail did, you know? But they got big ears, so maybe that's what people are talking about.
All their weights up there. Yeah.
Like, they got crazy big antlers. They got big ears. I get that. But that's the whole, like their heat dissipation in the ears thing, and the conversely with the body size in Wisconsin. So I don't know. They also migrate.
Go ahead.
They migrate down in the winter to avoid the snow and like go to warmer areas. So I would argue they're not going to be as inherently big bodies as the deer in Wisconsin that cannot migrate out of the snow and the cold.
Right, for sure. As I say, we need to figure out a way to arrange a face-off between, like, a 4.5-year-old Wisconsin swamp buck and a 4.5-year-old mountain mule deer or something, and just let them duke it out and see what happens. Yeah.
And, like, if you compare the average mule deer to the average whitetail killed, maybe they're bigger, but there's also, what, 30, 70 trillion million whitetails that are killed in Texas every year, and they've got, you know, they're like little dinkers body size compared to ours. So
right.
Know, but
yeah.
Mule deer are still dumb, so who cares?
Exactly. Well, dude, I wanted to get you back on because we've been a little late on our second quarter public land policy update. We got some unfortunate news, which anyone who's been following along with the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund, we touched on it a couple months ago, that it was voted to not be continued. And I believe as of last week, as this comes out, it was 2 weeks ago now, Mills Nelson stewardship is officially no more, unfortunately. And so I wanted to get John just to kind of talk about, I guess to start, like, it wasn't a surprise, I guess, necessarily, that like it's going to come to an end. But like, now that it is officially at an end, what, I guess, does that mean for Wisconsin public land in its current state? Like, we've got a lot going on the public land front, both in the like primary election front, everything across, you know, all states. With Knowles Nelson being no more, I guess, what does that mean for Wisconsin public lands in the near future?
Yeah, I think, I mean, setting the foundation of the Knowles Nelson stewardship program has been a program in Wisconsin for 37 years. Mm-hmm. That was not reauthorized. The funding for that program was not reauthorized for the next term. So the program currently has $0 to work with, making it functionally non-existent. There's no more money to work with. And it was it's a program that was set up to fund the acquisition, the purchasing of public lands in Wisconsin. Whether it's state purchasing of land or counties, cities, nonprofit groups, that the money in that fund would help the acquisition of those public lands. So if you think about a great example would be like nonprofit groups such as the Nature Conservancy or different county conservancies that we have across Wisconsin. They want to buy a parcel of land and conserve it and that parcel of land is going to cost $500,000. Mm-hmm. That organization puts up half of it, $250,000, and then Knowles Nelson would fund the other half of $250,000. That property would then be purchased by the organization, and part of the stipulations with the funding was you have to make it open to hunting, fishing, trapping, all forms of outdoor recreation, unless there was a, safety concern. But it defaulted to open to hunting, fishing, and trapping.
In perpetuity.
In perpetuity.
One of the big things. Like, it was never going to be able to be restricted.
Yep. So this program was set up for public land acquisition. Now that the program has $0, what that will basically mean for Wisconsin is that the state, the program will not have money to contribute to acquisitions to create more public land through this mechanism. So when the Nature Conservancy or Waukesha Land Conservancy want to go buy a new property, they will not be able to offset that 50% using Knowles Nelson. Can they still buy land to conserve? Yes. But it won't be part of Knowles Nelson. It won't have that money, and it won't be required to be open to hunting, fishing, and trapping for perpetuity. That, I think, is going to be the biggest impact that we're going to see is, yeah, there may be some public lands that are purchased and opened for recreation, but it'll be up to, insert conservancy group here, up to their discretion if they want to open it up to hunting, fishing, and trapping.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, the incremental addition of public lands is going to be what we notice. The public lands that we have today, that we already have today, they're not going away as a direct result of Knowles Nelson not having the funding.
Right.
We will continue to have those for the time being, unless somebody wants to sell them off, but that's a different different topic altogether.
It's on the docket. We'll get there.
Yes. That's Knowles Nelson, the impact of not having Knowles Nelson in a nutshell. We're not going to be able to add to any public land or conservation easements resulting in public access unless we reauthorize this program and put some money to it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a long battle in the state government that resulted in this, you know, killing of the program, essentially. I don't really, it's like going to drive me up a wall if I get into the specifics of how we got here, but what I've taken away from the battle over Knowles Nelson is that our politicians have politicized the issue. You can go, like, everybody talks about it. You can see it on the internet, like 94% or something like that of Wisconsin residents, Wisconsin voters support Knowles Nelson and want it to be reauthorized. Our politicians have turned that into a bargaining chip. Yes, the Republicans were the ones that initiated all of this by saying, we're going to take it out of the state budget. We don't want to reauthorize it. We want to change what it looks like. There were a number of different bills introduced, modified, all of that over the course of, you know, 6 months, a year. The Democrats had some motions that they put forward to try to get something with Knowles Nelson passed. But at the end of the day, the Republicans and the Democrats didn't come together and agree on anything. So now we have $0. And that's where I stand, is our politicians made this a political thing. And we're like, what the hell, guys? Go figure your shit out on your own. We just care about conservation and public lands. That's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to see a lot more politicization. Oh man, I need some coffee. We're going to see more politicization. Fucking A. You better politicization. Cut this out. Yeah. You're going to see more politicians making it a political issue as we move towards election season.
Mm-hmm.
I do not care about elections. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers does not care about elections. We care about public lands and the conservation of our public lands. You, as the voter, should make sure you're letting your politicians, whether they're candidates, incumbents, whatever, let them know what you want to see when it comes to public lands, waters, and wildlife. I don't give a shit who's in office. I don't care who it is. I want our public lands to be protected and conserved. How we get there is up to voters. I'm very tired of the infighting in Madison of, well, this side did this, this side did that. Well, Knowles Nelson is dead. I don't really care how we got there. How are we going to fix it? How are we going to get it back? That's what I care about. So
yeah, definitely. Do you mentioned earlier, you know, if we do see public lands purchased, it will not be with a guaranteed opportunity to hunt and fish on these properties. Do you anticipate seeing, if there are lands purchased, like I guess them being a different, for lack of a better term, I guess like a different type of land? Like, do you anticipate them being more, you know, not to like, not saying anything good or bad about them, but like more suburban type, like, oh, we bought 40 acres to put prairie on or with like bike paths or something like that, versus buying land in maybe a more rural area that has more, a little bit better wildlife habitat or something like that? Do you anticipate anything like that?
I think it depends group to group on what that looks like. If I think about, I'll just give the example of Waukesha Land Conservancy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll make the assumption that they are going to come into a bunch of money and are able to purchase land outright without the use of Knowles Nelson, right? Waukesha County is inherently more urbanized than, you know, the Driftless area, we'll call it, like any county they're in, right? It's not as rural. So yes, you are going to have the potential for more suburban or urban land acquisitions, because their stated intent as an organization is the conservation of habitat and the land. That is their intent as the organization, is like the land and the land ethic. They do have properties today that, you know, they fall into three categories of purchase with Knowles Nelson, so obviously allows hunting, purchased without Knowles Nelson funds that does allow hunting, and then purchased without Knowles Nelson and does not allow hunting.
Hey guys, I just wanted to take a quick sec to tell you about Lone Wolf Custom Gear. Lone Wolf Custom Gear is as good as it gets when it comes to mobile hunting equipment. Whether you're a saddle or stand guy, public land or private, Lone Wolf Custom Gear has a set of sticks, a stand, a camera arm, and any number of accessories to get you closer to your target buck. To make it even better, everything is 100% USA sourced and made right here in the Midwest. And it's even assembled right across the river in Iowa by hunters who love chasing deer just as much as you do. To build your kit today, go visit lonewolfcustomgear.com. Now, let's get back to the episode.
If we take out the Knowles Nelson piece, yes, there are properties today that Waukesha Land Conservancy allows hunting on because they understand the conservation mechanisms that hunting is an important part of managing ecosystems. But there are properties that are in more urban areas that neighbors complain they don't want hunting, et cetera, et cetera. So there are absolutely properties that exist right now in these conservancy type groups that don't allow hunting. Is that a possibility in the future? Yes, absolutely. But it depends on what types of organizations would be purchasing these lands. I don't see like Nature Conservancy buying something in downtown Milwaukee. You know what I mean?
For sure.
But it's possible. And now we're going to be faced with this juxtaposition of, well, a group purchased this for public access and public recreation, but now there is the possibility to exclude hunting and fishing.
Hmm. That's interesting, man. So it's what, I guess on that note then, like you talked about Nature Conservancy quite a bit, but what role are some of these like nonprofits or these conservation organizations, whether it be like a Nature Conservancy or a Ducks Unlimited or a Pheasants Forever, or you know, pick any one of them, what role, I guess I would assume an increased role, do you anticipate seeing while Knowles Nelson is still, I guess, fundless? Like, do you anticipate a greater role in, I guess, the acquisition of these public lands? I mean, we talked with the Ducks Unlimited guys last summer about how much they use Knowles Nelson to purchase different tracts of land and everything. Without Knowles Nelson, I guess, how crucial is it for folks to be involved with these nonprofits, or for these nonprofits to step up and try to acquire more public land?
It is critical for organizations like Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, all of, you know, Ducks Unlimited, RMEF, all of that, And even more importantly, people, individual people, listeners, to go out there and help out at some of these work days, habitat improvement opportunities to show, not even to show or display, but to take care of what we have.
Right.
The state already has a backlog of projects that they can't complete on public lands because they don't have the money to do it. Our state budget, from a wildlife and conservation standpoint, is upside down.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough money to do the things that we want to do. And right. the habitat improvement project list is just getting longer and longer. We need to go do those things on a volunteer basis. We need to go, I need to go show up at work days and cut buckthorn, treat buckthorn, help get the land in shape for the biologists or whatever crews to, take the time that would have taken them 10 days to prepare. Now they only need to come in and spend one day on this area and reduce the costs so that we're taking care of what we have.
Right.
That'll also, not only we're putting our money where our mouth is, I think it's also good to show our communities around us that, we can take care of the things that we have. So we can take on more. We can add more public lands in the future. It's like, I got a dog before my wife and I started talking about having kids so that we can figure out, can I take care of this dog before I add kids to the mix?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If I can't take care of what I have, if I can't take care of this dog that lives with me, what business do I have adding a child into the mix? And that's also what we have to think about with public lands. It's like we can't just keep adding to the available public lands without taking care of what we have.
Right. That's such an important distinction too, because you're absolutely right. Like if we've got all of these public lands, or say we, manage to acquire more and more and more, but then everybody's spread so thin that we can't do anything with it. And obviously the DNR budget shortfall is, no new news, I guess, at this point in the year. But you're right, because if we can't continue to maintain these properties and show that these properties are worth protecting and worth holding on to, and they just get overgrown and overrun and just turn into these, hell holes, the valuation of that property and that land just declines to a point where would it make more sense to just take this unused, unmaintained parcel of land and try to develop it and do whatever. Now, obviously, a lot of our state public lands are the lands that could not be farmed or built on. And so we kind of are already dealing with, some stuff. As I don't want to say bottom of the barrel stuff, but stuff that's a lot more difficult to develop and I guess make money off of. But yeah, it's spooky, man. I mean, I'll be very curious to see what happens in a couple weeks here with the primary and everything and what direction it seems like Wisconsin heads. You touched on it earlier about, reaching out to these candidates about the importance of Knowles Nelson, advocating for Knowles Nelson. What are some other things that folks can do, I guess, as we head into the primary here in terms of just making sure they're the most informed about where these candidates may stand on certain issues and everything?
For state government, I would say, give them a call. Give their office a call. Send them an email. Politicians often seem like they're like in an ivory tower and like they're untouchable. Mm-hmm. No, you can literally just call them. You can just email them. And you may have a staffer that replies to your email or picks up the phone. But you could also just end up talking to that representative, that senator, whatever it may be. Ask them, engage in a conversation. It is your right as a constituent to engage in these conversations with your elected officials. So ask them, put them on the spot. Go direct to the source. Don't listen. Like, there's all these PACs, you know, political action committees that are going to be saying one thing or the other about the other side, blah, blah, blah. That's all going to be BS. Call up your representatives. They're literally just people. Call them up. That's it. The other
especially
thing
right now, like they're candidates right now, right? They're not the governor. They're not the state rep. They're not anything. And
they need your vote, right? Like whether they're running for reelection or they're just candidates, like they need your vote. I mean, I'll get the example of, like, I live in the U.S. Congress, like the U.S. House of Representatives. Glenn Grothman is my my congressperson right now. He came to my front door himself to get my signature for his reelection bid, like to get on the ballot. The sitting U.S. congressperson in D.C. came to my door to get signatures. Like, even the federal level people, like our representatives, they're still just people. They're not a figment of our imagination. They're not celebrities. They're literally just people, and we need to treat them like people.
100%. Contrary to what the algorithms might make it appear, they are
the ruling class can only be the ruling class if we let them rule us. Mm-hmm. We need to take the power back. That's the 100%. American ideals.
Yeah. On the BHA front, I didn't prep you for this question, but this is just curious, or my own mind wandering here. Data centers are obviously a hot topic right now in terms of land acquisition, in terms of water quality, soil quality, just availability and everything. We've already seen some interesting stuff. By interesting, I mean apparently bad, very apparently bad stuff come out of the one that went in Beaver Dam in terms of water quality and you know, what people's tap water are looking like and stuff like that. Is there anything that BHA has done or can do, or really, whether it's BHA or just as individuals, like in terms of figuring out, I mean, obviously right now we don't fully know or understand what the long-term effects of these data centers are going to be. We know that the immediate effects in most cases have been pretty dang negative. What can folks do to, I mean, try and prevent this stuff from happening? I mean, and I'm assuming it's right up there with what you just said about, you know, talking to your candidates and everything, but these things seem to be sprouting up like weeds, and I think a lot of folks are concerned right now about where they're going to leave us in 5 to 10 years.
I mean, I don't know what the answer is with data centers. I don't think anybody does.
Right.
It's such a new issue, but it's a good conversation to have. I think the first question I have in my brain is like, do we need all of these data centers? Is there a real need, or is there a perceived need? I don't have the answer to that. I'm not an expert, but like, that's to me the logical first question to ask. If we do, if we need all of these data centers, we truly do, then okay, let's start having the next conversation of, you know, what are the impacts going to be? What are the environmental impacts going to be? That how can we minimize it? How can we mitigate all of these things? with that, I think there's going to be a lot of, I don't want to use the words like misinformation or disinformation, but there's going to be a lot of perspectives from like both sides of the data center issue that are literally being paid for. Like people are being paid to support and people are being paid to oppose data centers in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Like right now that is happening. Don't believe anything you hear. Like you look at, think about everything with a critical mindset. And with that, know what your concerns are as an individual and go to your elected officials, even at a local level, to explain to them, like, this is what I'm concerned about. These are my hard lines that I don't want you to cross, because it's actually the local officials that are going to be like the deciding factors in a lot of these things. Like,
totally.
You know, the town council or whatever of Beaver Dam, of Port Washington, like they're the ones making these decisions at the end of the day. Those politicians are even more accessible than some other people because they probably live down the road from you.
Yeah. 100%.
The like data center thing is really interesting to me, because and I kind of think about it like solar panels. I don't want to see the loss of any habitat, whether it's, you know, terrestrial habitat or aquatic habitat, land or water. I don't want to see the loss of any habitat ever, whether that's a data center or a cookie cutter suburban housing development. Like out west, they talk about cows, not condos. We've been talking about prairies, not panels, for a while in Wisconsin now, right? I don't want to lose my habitat to solar panels. I don't want to lose my habitat to data centers. If we're thinking about like solar panels, I mean, my philosophy with solar panels is always, I want every single roof and every single parking lot covered with solar panels before we develop an inch of farmland or habitat into solar farms. Mm-hmm. I think same thing for data centers. Why do we have to go tear up 80 acres of whitetail habitat to build a data center when there's an abandoned Kmart down the road that hasn't been touched in 20 years? Mm-hmm. And that's not even getting into like the water recycling issue and all of that. But
well, it almost makes you wonder if they it's like they, it feels like they piloted some of these things, these early ones, in more rural, more, you know, lower populated areas, just to make sure that it works and to kind of like fine tune before they bring them closer to the big cities and stuff like that. I mean, that's what it
I think them, it's just, I think it's easier. Doubt,
but yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. Easier.
I think it's easier for them in the short term.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
very true.
A greenfield construction, meaning a new construction in a greenfield, is tending to be cheaper than a brownfield construction, or adapting existing structures to the needs of whatever it may be that you're putting in there. So, mm-hmm. And then you've got a lot of different competing interests in there too, like. The data center, whoever's operating the data center isn't the one that's actually building it. So you've got big construction companies that are advocating for these new constructions because they're going to make money off of it. They're going to make a whole lot more money building a new facility than they are adapting a sports authority to whatever it needs to be, you know? Mm-hmm. So don't believe anything you hear. It's all lies. But we need to ask these questions and hold people accountable, because everybody's lying to us. We need to try to see through the bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what concerns people the most is nobody can get a straight answer on anything with this. Nobody knows if it's good or bad or what the actual end goal is for it, aside from, oh, it's just going to be a supercomputer. It's going to help power AI. Okay, well, I've heard nothing but bad things about AI and how it's going to take jobs and stuff like that, which might be right, might be wrong. You know what I mean? I think it depends on the industry you're in, but nobody's able to really discern what the ultimate why is behind any of this, aside from, well, now this is the new thing and we're just going to be sprouting these up because this is a new big industry. I think if people actually got a straight answer on what was going on, they'd be a lot more potentially open or potentially like even more closed to some of these things being built and going up and all that. But yeah, it's spooky, man. It's a weird time of, again, I hate to say, like you said, I don't want to say misinformation or disinformation or anything, but just a lack of clarity on everything is, I think, starting to kind of get to folks, myself included, just in terms of like, what is actually going on here? But I don't know. We'll find out soon enough, I suppose.
There is one other thing I wanted to talk about, not about data centers.
Yeah, what you got?
I want to make sure we don't forget to talk about it. So unless you live under a rock, you've probably heard over the last couple of years that people have been trying to sell off public lands in the West, right? It's been primarily a Western issue, whether it's BLM mm-hmm. land or whatever, that Mike Lee keeps putting things into bills at a national level to try to sell off public land. Yes, that is a huge issue for our Western landscapes and the public land that we have out West. It's happening here in Wisconsin too. Our public lands in Wisconsin are being and will continue to be threatened to be sold off. The example I will give you immediately is there is a wildlife area in Jefferson County, southeast Wisconsin, called the Prince's Point Wildlife Area. This wildlife area is one of the only places that you can hunt ducks in a motorized boat in that area of the state. And it was also recently just about doubled in size from a acreage standpoint, converting the new like second half of the wildlife areas, converting a bunch of old farm fields back into wetlands.
Super cool.
That happens to be right up against a commercial egg farm in Palmyra, Wisconsin. This commercial egg farm has had to kill a few million of its own chickens because it got avian flu.
Mm-hmm.
There was an avian flu outbreak and had to, you know, euthanize the herd or whatever. Flock.
Oh, yeah.
Cage. Is it a flock if they're in cages, inside flock? So that company, we'll say, influenced some politicians to propose a bill that would allow the NRB, the Natural Resources Board, to direct the DNR to sell off public lands within, I can't remember exactly what it was, but a mile of an egg farm. Egg farm was not very clearly defined. Did not take me more than 30 seconds to piece together that just up the road from this one specific wildlife area and egg farm there's another egg farm that borders a whole bunch of state forest land. Why the hell would they want to do this? Well, the egg producer is convinced that it's the migrating waterfowl that are giving their chickens the avian flu, which there's no data to support that. There's actually some research to suggest that it's more songbirds than anything that can transmit the avian flu a little more than migrating waterfowl. But the egg operation has been on record to say that if the DNR is instructed to sell this chunk of land within a mile of their egg operation, they can go in and make the habitat or the land there uninviting to waterfowl. And they can actively deter waterfowl from the area so that their chickens aren't at risk. So not only do they want to sell our public land to this company, but they want to deter migrating waterfowl from their egg operation.
Did they define what measures of deterrence that would be? Is it like sound cannons? Is it like
that was not listed in the bill. I would assume that it would be under U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service guidelines, whatever that may be. But that is still, regardless, that would still be deterrence on a property that is neighboring a wildlife area that is meant for waterfowl hunting.
Right.
And this was all like inspired by this one property, the Princess Point Wildlife Area. But the way that the bill was written opens it up to literally any piece of state land within that radius of an egg farm, which was not clearly defined. So it could be just a dude selling his eggs for $5 a dozen on the side of the road. Massively.
What in the world?
Like not well thought out at all. 100%. Due to the pressure of commercial egg producers that, in my opinion, have gone on record saying, we want to, one, take your public lands away, privatize them, and two, deter wildlife from the area. Those two things are happening here in Wisconsin right now, have happened. Luckily, this bill did not pass. I think the governor vetoed it. I believe it passed both the House and the Senate.
Yeah.
And the governor vetoed it. Your politicians in Wisconsin, our politicians, passed this bill to allow the sale of public lands. Selling off public lands is not just an out west thing. We are facing that risk here today in our backyards. And that scares the shit out of me.
Right. I mean, yes, it's costly, but like, it's a hell of a lot easier to move an egg farm and, you know, build, I don't know the details of what goes into housing a couple million chickens or whatever there. But it's a heck of a lot easier to move one of those farms than it is to move a bunch of wildlife that, whether it migrates through there, whether it lives there year round. That's crazy, dude. And I didn't realize that it had made it that far to the point where the governor had to veto it. I knew that it did not move on. But you're absolutely right. If our first and second lines of politicians are just okay with it, especially with, you know, the broad strokes approach that it sounds like the verbiage in that initiative has, to just solely say within 1 mile of an egg farm. I mean, that's spooky, dude, because that sets a dangerous, dangerous precedent for all the other farming operations in the state, as well as states, you know, even outside of Wisconsin. As soon as they see that Wisconsin's doing it, then, you know, it might. I mean, we know how much money these corporate farms have and how well-versed they are in litigation in their favor. That's super spooky, man. I mean, hopefully it stays vetoed and doesn't rear its ugly head again, but that's something. I'm really glad you brought that up, man, because that is something that I remember reading about. Like, how long ago was that, that it was vetoed? It was like
the spring.
Like a year ago?
Or was it spring? It was this spring. And now our state legislature is not in session. So, yeah, we don't have any bills popping up right now because they're not working on that stuff. But when they're back in session, God, I hope we don't see any more of these. But if this is any indication of the future, it's going to keep coming.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't mean to like fear monger with this, but it happened.
Yeah.
Like they tried to sell off our public lands in Wisconsin. Yeah. It's happening.
Yeah.
This isn't a what if. This is a, oh, it happened. And there was just one guy that vetoed it.
Yeah. After it made it past a lot of other eyes. Like that's crazy. Jeez. Well, buddy, before we wrap this one up, I guess, where do we leave folks in terms of what are some things that they should make sure that they do to, you know, continue to protect public lands as we head into election season? And we touched on, reach out to those candidates and let them know the issues that you care about, especially even after they're elected, whoever does get elected, especially then reach out to them and make sure that they know what issues we care about. But aside from that, what can folks be doing, and what other stuff does our chapter have coming down the pike here as we head into fall?
What can people do is, I mean, with your elected officials and all of that, your neighbors, whatever, have some human conversations. Treat everybody else as a human, no matter what office or chair they sit in. Have a conversation. See where people stand. Express what matters to you. And then everything else will fall in place. Join whatever organization you want. I think BHA is a good one, but I'm also a member of, you know, Pheasants Forever, NWTF, Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. Like the list goes on. These are all great groups doing great things. I give my money and my support to these groups, and I think it's a helpful thing to do because we can't do things if we don't have the money and ability to do so. Or resources of people showing up to work days. So get out there, get involved with whatever you have to offer, whether it's time, money, energy, good vibes, whatever you can spare. Just engage in conservation a little. But if you're looking for some fun, we do have some cool, fun events coming up, and I actually have a list. We're going to have, well, one, from a stewardship standpoint, monthly events up in the Chippewa Valley that I think by the time this releases, the next one will be on the 25th of July, but that'll be going on monthly. We'll have a monthly stewardship event up in the Chippewa Valley on Thursday, July 30th at the Meat Eater store in Brookfield. We're going to have a little shindig with Giannis Putellis from Meat Eater.
Let's go.
Talking about elk hunting. Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation will be there too. I'm going to be there with BHA, talk about elk hunting. Hopefully I'm going to be able to learn some stuff there too. Saturday, August 1st, Ojibwa Bow Hunters has their Founders Day shoot in New Berlin, Wisconsin. I'll be there with BHA. We're going to be doing trivia at night, conservation trivia. Be a whole bunch of fun. The 8th, August 8th, Tony's doing a Learn to Hunt Bear, like you talked about. August 12th, I heard there's like some deer scouting thing, you know,
some D-bags putting on, I think. Yeah,
some guys that killed bucks that they're way, you know, 2 gigabucks for what they deserve. they'll be teaching you how to find some big bucks.
Jacob Sklenner, Paul Lanier, and Derek Malcor.
Yeah, all just killers. Mm-hmm. Great Dane Pub in Fitchburg. What do we have next? August 15th, Foam Fest. If you want to see Derek Malcor again, you can go to Foam Fest in Horicon with the OKest Hunter dudes. And then my favorite event of the year is the Waterfowl Expo in Oshkosh. That's August 21st and 22nd. You find me and BAJ at all of those things. So there's something in there for everyone. Whether you you like bow hunting, you like waterfowl hunting, you like sitting behind a computer and thinking about hunting, you can go have fun in whatever medium you want to.
Absolutely. One thing I'll add to that list is, say you're not a waterfowler, but you're looking for something to do on August 22nd, the Lone Wolf Custom Gear Mobile Hunter Roadshow, the Whitetail Roadshow, as it has been rebranded as of last year, will be down in Bellevue, Iowa at the DeQuisto Farm. I will be there. That is an absolute hoot of a time. Get to talk with some absolute killers, share a bunch of knowledge, learn a bunch, and see a lot of antler all in one place. So definitely go check that out. If you are a diehard bow hunter, whitetail hunter, mobile hunter, what have you, more so than a waterfowl hunter. But dude, this has been awesome, man. I really appreciate you taking time to come on and share some knowledge on this. Good luck as we get, hopefully I talk to you before you head out to out west, but if I do not, good luck out there, man. I appreciate your time and all you do for VHA. Folks, go check out those events, get signed up, get RSVP'd, and we will talk to you next Tuesday.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at The Wisconsin Sportsman. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore on this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, Lone Wolf Custom Gear, Onyx Hunt, Huntworth Gear, Good Chance Fly Fishing, and the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Please go support the brands that support this show, and if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other awesome outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.